You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is the Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. I'm Jenna Bosgarden, Manager of Digital Marketing for Smart Equine.
And this is Ashley Lecomte-Lozich, Head of R&D for Smart Equine. Coming up on today's show, we're talking about modern horse keeping and how it can affect your horse's mental wellness.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinary or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinary or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
We love our horses, but modern horsekeeping practices don't always match up with what nature designed for them. Today, we're going to talk about the mental and emotional side of horse health and the challenges that we create in our care routines and the way that we can help our horses thrive.
And I just want to emphasize going into this that none of this is a critique on how you or I or anybody else keeps their horses. We know every horse is unique. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. So personally, my goal in setting up this conversation is just to try and learn something that I can take away with me to do or to try, and hopefully you can feel the same. So we can kind of jump right on into it, Ashley.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, we as Smart Equine employees know, because it's been a really big part of like our personal narrative, that modern horsekeeping is a challenge on horses. So there's stuff like not everybody gets 24 hours of turnout time. Yeah. They're being ridden, which is a demand. Maybe if your horse is, you know, a pasture pet, not so much. But for any horse that's in work, like that's a demand that changes their day. Our feeding practices where we do grain meals, the sensory overload, or even like underload with isolation and just lack of consistency. So those are kind of the main things that I want to touch on. And would love to get your input too, as somebody who manages so many horses in the setting, and what you see and what works for you and what I've seen what works for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, okay, let's go back up to the top where you started off with turnout.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I get like a call of a new potential boarder, like the first question that they're always asking is like, what does your turnout schedule look like?
Totally.
And this is a big one that I think impacts every horse, because we know that horses are designed to live in herds. Like they are herd animals and they are not supposed to be isolated in any capacity, right? Well, mm-hmm. we've changed that.
Yes.
So domesticated horses are often isolated, and whether or not your horse is a good sport about it doesn't mean that it's not causing them stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
So turn out your horse as often as possible. Is that always feasible? No. But keeping them in herds, keeping them constantly roaming, making sure that they have access to a space where they can like actually get up to good speed. So like a nice large pasture where they're living with other horses. Spoiler, both of my horses do not live this way, right? So like Billy and Andy both live in private limestone paddocks. Okay. So
okay.
I'm the first one to say that here I am, ding, 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 modern horsekeeping. Adding stress to my horse's lives. So, you know, in an effort, there are just some things that I cannot, we don't have a mare herd. That's just something, our barn does not have one.
Mm-hmm.
Just because for no reason other than all of our pasture board clients are geldings. So we just don't have a mare herd. And then Andy does not get along well with others. And he has been banished from herd life after what my trainer has called the scariest day of her life.
Oh, God.
Long time ago. Yeah. So he had a little altercation and we've never wanted to try again to see what would happen because it was
fair. Yep.
So listen, both of my horses live on it alone in a paddock. And actually, my daughter's ponies are founder risks because they're super teeny. And they also, I mean, they do live together. They're a bonded pair, but they also live in a tiny limestone paddock. And then when they're done living in their limestone paddock for 10 hours, they go into a stall by themselves, right? So, like, this is what a lot of horses' lives look like.
Yeah.
And that may not be something that you can change, right? What do you have to have extended herd turnout space? Like, if you're inner city, right? Like, if you're in a location, like I'm outside of Chicago, you're probably not going to have a 200, 300-acre farm where your horse has access to a gigantic pasture and a whole bunch of friends.
Yep.
So I think you all you can really do is make sure that you're adjusting what you can. And if turnout is not something that your barn offers, obviously you can, you know, go find something that has longer, better turnout with herds, or you can just make sure that you're making, you know, you're making every effort to get your horse out of their stall, out of their paddock, mm-hmm. take them for nice leisurely trail rides 3 days a week, hand graze them. You know, I like to go, our riding club on Saturday mornings has our walk only trail ride where there's like 20 or 30
so
horses.
Cute.
Yeah. But like getting them out there where they can still socialize. Great.
Yeah.
You know, making sure that when they are in their individual turnout, that they still have eye shot and they can nose to nose over the fences. And they're still in an environment where they can see other horses and socialize the best that they can. Mm. Same with stalls, right? Some of them have like the cute little neck cutouts where they can peek their heads out,
yep.
See their buddies, put their head out a window. So, I mean, turnout is obviously 24/7 would be the goal, but that's not feasible, right? We ask our horses to go to horse shows. Sometimes they have to stand in the stall for 3 days, a week,
sure do.
2 weeks while they're
Sometimes
at a horse
they're
show.
Rehabbing, same concept.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, let's dig into that. Like rehabbing. I mean, but that's something that happens. And like what we're talking about right now is like what we've asked them to do. If they're rehabbing, yeah. like this is for their own good. So this could
yeah,
be a horse
that's
that has
like a
been,
whole new episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That is that. Cause it could be a horse that's been on pasture for their whole life, now has to stand mm-hmm. in a box stall recovering from colic surgery or recovering from a soft tissue injury.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, reduced turnout, increased stall time, always going to add a little bit of stress. So do what you can in that capacity. You know, having them turned out 24/7 in a group of buddies is obviously the ideal. But I mean, Jenna, how did you keep your horses?
So my last gelding was the love of my life and an absolute terror due to the of his own, right? So we got him from a barn that had really small sandlot turnout. I was 14. I got on his back to try him out. He absolutely dumped me. Had a great shoulder duck when he landed off of a fence. I thought he was super athletic and super fun. I was like, I still want to take him on trial in the barn. I don't know. It was like, sure. I mean, you ate it, but you got up, so it's fine. So took him home, did a trial on him, did a lesson on him the next day. He dropped his shoulder over a fence. I snapped my collarbone. Called my mom. Was like, hey, I'm on the way to the ER, but also I still want the horse.
Uh-huh.
So bless my mother. My trainer worked with another trainer who knew the horse before all of this, and she had recommended him. So she was like, let me take him. I know we can fix this. She mm-hmm. turned him out into a 3-acre field, mm-hmm. and he ran for 3 days straight. Mm-hmm. Just
had to get some
big, big bouncy trot, big canter. They kept putting ponies in with him because he would jump out. He went through like 5 or 6 ponies who would be at the gate just like wheezing, like, please help me, not anybody.
Give me
so, yeah. So we learned that like really athletic, really smart, really fun horse needs more than what he yeah. was getting. So yeah. I'm in New England. We don't have a whole ton of turnout, and where I was had small grass lots, but they were small. Mm-hmm. So he got a buddy who was blind and would not jump out with him. So he was contained to his lot, and he got overnight turnout in the indoor arena.
Nice.
Was it a perfect solution? No, but it did keep it so he was able to take a deep breath and get moving more days than not.
Yeah.
Eventually, when we retired off of showing and I was able to move him to a non-show barn that had bigger turnout, he was just out. I was like, please put him out first. Yeah. Please bring him in last. Everybody yeah. will have a better time if that's the case. And he had to stall rest a couple of times for a soft tissue. He had horrible sure. confirmation. And he was never more of a dragon than when he didn't get turnout. The moment he turned out, he was a puppy dog. So yeah. it was just crazy to me, like the very, very noticeable difference of 1 week of middle limited turnout versus, you know, any amount of time where he got to be outside and be a horse. And I never had a horse like that before. He was the first one that was really, truly so sensitive to how much time he got touching grass, essentially.
Totally. Like, I mean, we always say that as a joke, like, go touch grass, right? As a person.
Yeah.
But like, and I think that has a lot to do with why the quote unquote letdown period of a racehorse literally is chuck them out in a field. You know,
yep.
they've been living in a box stall every day mm-hmm. of their life. I mean, for the most part, right?
And no matter how pampered and loved they are, it's still not the same as all day turnout.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that's a huge piece, right? So turnout is just so much of it. My horses are turned
yes.
out 10 hours a day, which is great. And on this
yeah.
on the spectrum, that's a long time.
Yes.
I mean, we have some barns in the area that don't have enough space to accommodate everyone out. So they have to like rotate. So I'm
yep.
like really happy about 10 hours, but they still then do go back into their stall, which then like leads me to my next point, which is if they're going to be in a stall, give them something to do. So I'm a big fan of free choice forage. Like, I feel like the average horse probably cannot eat enough. Like, there's no such thing as too much hay. Now, again, I say average horse. There is then Andy, who like gets fat on air, so we soak his hay, but I still want him eating. So we'll soak it and, you know, reduce the sugar content in there so that he can still eat it without getting fat. Put it in a slow feed hay pillow. I'm also a fan of feeding on the ground. So like a nice slow feed hay pillow, however you want to put it, you can hang it. But a slow feed hay bag is going to help them continuously eat forage the way that they would be, right? If they were standing out in a pasture with their buddies grazing all day. And that
it's
way,
it's essentially just the horse snuffle mat, right?
Like exactly. Yes.
And more work to do to get the food.
Right. So it's food, one. But then having to work for it is then mental enrichment. Mm-hmm. So big fan of that. Always have forage in front of your horse. If they're going to be in a stall, then they should be eating. And this is a place where we see this a lot. This is like in showing. And I always bring more food that I know they're going to eat to a horse show because I'm like, I want them to be, they are not getting any turnout. They are standing in a stall for 3 days. They're going
hopefully
to
getting hand walked and grazed.
Yes, of course.
Like
and ridden.
Yeah. Yes, but it's still not your 10 hours of turnout.
Exactly. Exactly. So food is going to be like there. Some horses are getting a lot of grain meals, right? So we'll see these like very specifically race horses, you know, eventers, jumpers, horses, reiners,
barrel.
Yes. Senior horses. Exactly. So there's lots of varying reasons of why a horse would have a higher energy demand that requires grain. So but making sure that that long stem forage is constantly available for them, because what else do we know about lack of long stem forage and stall confinement? It's a recipe for gastric ulcers. So ensuring that if you can't control, like your horse has a suspensory and they have to stand in for a while, I'd rather them be fat and happy and have food in front of them constantly than be standing up or, you know, weaving or cribbing because they're standing in a stall for 6 weeks recovering or whatever it is.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, that's a huge help as well.
And I think, I mean, we've talked about, you know, forage first wherever you can. We've talked about big grain meals and so much of it, same with turnout. Like, I think a theme that for anybody listening who hasn't caught on to it yet, like so much of this is going to be consistency, which I think is like such a big thing that we can keep talking about. But I just want to call it out now for people who are, you know, listening in and continuing to like hear this in our messaging. Like keeping a horse healthy, happy, sound, mentally enriched is hard. It's not easy to be a really good horse steward, but as consistent as you can be with whatever you can do is going to make a world of difference. As much turnout as you can consistently, as much forage as you can and enrichment as you can consistently. I know we've done the hay balls and like the treat balls and things like that. And those are not like a cure-all in my horse's world, at least. Like he needed the forage and the slow feed for sure. But they were great ways to also just give him a different brain game to work on for a few minutes. We in the summertime would do like, have you seen where people will freeze carrots and apples into ice?
Yeah, I did that with my dog, but with like,
did you? So I did it with my horse.
Yeah, same story.
And he loved it. And just like big chunks of ice were broken up and things. And it was a good game. So anything you can do like that, I think is really big for when there's more stall time. And the other thing that you brought up with this is like, you're going to be riding your horse. Yep. A lot of people are going to be riding your horse or working your horse in some capacity. Not everybody, but for those of you who are, like, workload demands do technically put a mental strain on your horse. You are going out into an arena or a trail or something else, and you are asking them to perform a thought that is not natural to them. It is stepping over a set of logs that are high up on the trail. It is crossing a stream confidently without questioning and snorting a whole bunch first. Yep. It is jumping a tricky question. It is performing a lateral movement that's not something they consciously think about. So like that kind of thing, it is a mental strain. It's not, I'm not saying
working.
That riding your...
Yes. They're working.
My job is also a mental strain.
Right.
Podcast. The podcast is the best. But
no,
like,
the podcast is never a mental strain.
But like your horse is putting in mental effort to this, and that does... it is a factor in their mental wellness. So like, is there anything that you've seen with your horses? Because you've been a competitive rider. Like, is there stuff that you've seen with your riding workload that can help them with that?
Yes. And I would say this may not apply to everyone because I know a lot of people go south for like the winter circuit. But if you are not that person, I've been once, but if you are a summer showgirl or guy, the best thing that I can say is like when the spring rolls around and you get that first 70 degree day, like don't go balls to the wall. Like that is, I think a slow introduction back into work is both physically and mentally the correct way to get them back into game face, right? So they've been hanging out all winter, you know, fluffing up, hanging with their buddies, and now it's time to work again. A nice slow introduction, one, is going to keep them from being physically injured, which is important.
Yes.
But two, I think that it gives them a time to acclimate their brains as well, get ready for what's ahead. So I like to start off with conditioning sets. I go out for a trot, a nice loose rein trot with some buddies. It's probably been a while since they've been out on the cross country course. And of course, all of the horse eating deer and logs and streams.
So many.
I know. They're back with vengeance. So taking some time to just slowly adjust them back into the world of showing. I mean, this is something that just happened. I think on one of our last episodes, we were talking about how Tilly was being scoped.
Yep.
So in June, she had her best show since I've owned her. They finished in fifth place. My trainer was riding her. It was one of her best finishes in a recognized 3-day event. She did amazing.
Which is amazing. Congratulations.
And thank you. We're very excited. And then in July, she came back out and couldn't move forward. So we're like, okay, something's wrong. We scope her for ulcers. We treat her for ulcers. Everything is great. What we did not do was then toss her right back into the same environment that had caused the problem to begin with. So it was a slow introduction. You know, the rides were shorter. We were more focused on her mental health. How does she feel? How does the horse beneath you feel right now? Is this nervousness? Mm-hmm. Is she jittery? Not asking too much of her, and then stopping on high notes. There's no need to drill. If we're having a really positive experience, we're going, you know, across the street to go check out the cross country course. We're just going to walk in a couple circles, eat some hay or eat some grass, take a couple bites, and then come home.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of positive reinforcement. If they're nervous leaving the barn and you can tell that their mental health is struggling, make every time they leave the barn a very positive experience. So then they're like, oh, there's nothing to worry about here.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, obviously consistency is key there, but some of these things are unavoidable. It's not always consistent because some of us take the winters off. And then when we come back, we have to start off nice and slow, low and slow, and build that consistency right back up.
Yeah. And I think for me, I was always lucky to have an indoor ring throughout. So it was freezing, but I was still getting my butt in the saddle. And it wasn't the same kind of riding. And I think that was something that was really hard for me as a teenager. Yeah. But as an adult, I was a lot more cognizant of it. My horse didn't come out the same in the winter. And as a teenager, you're so focused on yourself, or at least I was, that I didn't really think about his focus and where his priorities and things were at in the winter. And I was like, why is this horse just not giving me what he gives me in the spring and summer? And as an adult, it would be like, okay, wintertime is a different animal. This is not the same horse that you cuddle with in the summer. This is a fire-breathing dragon. So what if we just spend the winter doing trot sets? What if it's just seeing how long and low we can get for however many laps until I feel like he's taking that deep breath, and then we call it. And the moment I was able to be just more in tune with that, kind of like what you said, if your horse is nervous walking out of the barn, what does that mean and what can you do? That changed our relationship and it made springtime so much better.
Yeah.
We had essentially just been legging down and up all winter and the same kind of consistency. So he was mentally able to be there with me and didn't feel like I had been drilling him for being quote unquote naughty all winter when it really wasn't his goal. And I think that's something that I've had a really solid turnaround on with my mentality towards horses is my horse was never trying to be naughty.
Even when
he dropped his shoulder and snapped my collarbone, he wasn't actually trying to cause harm. He was just so fresh out of his mind. He didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a big game changer for me is it's not him being naughty. It's something he's trying to tell me something. How do I fix? How do I do? Am I doing too much drilling on flat work? Are we jumping too much? Have we not taken a ride around the property in a hot minute? Are we doing too many of that? And he wants to do something more engaging. What is it?
Okay. I know this isn't the topic of this podcast, but you said it. So I want to echo it. In 99% of cases. So obviously there is always going to be that one scenario where the horse really is just a jerk. But I think that in 99% of cases, I don't think horses are ever naughty. I think that there is always an impetus. I saw this one, I can't remember where I saw it, but it was a case study where they were explaining the horse's bad behavior and all of the things that he had been doing that were unsavory. And they ultimately opted to euthanize the horse for safety reasons, right? And what they found was that he had some very strange form of osteosarcoma where his rib had been ossifying into his soft tissue. Right. So
oh
like,
my gosh.
Exactly. So like, okay, listen, not the mental health thing, but just to articulate that 9 times out of 10, the reason your horse is behaving a certain way is because there is sensory input to something that is causing them to behave that way, right?
Isn't that a part of mental wellness?
100%.
Like, if something's going wrong, like we do our due diligence to figure out what it is. Because if your horse is bucking every time you land off of a fence, maybe they're having a great time, or maybe there's something else they're trying to tell you. And we don't know if we don't explore it. I think that's kind of like what all of this is supposed to be, is just like, what can you explore? What can you find out? What can you learn about your horse and their behavior, and how can we make it better?
Yep, I totally agree. So like, I think when we went back to the consistency episode, and like one of our big takeaways was study your horse and pay attention to them
and
listen to what they have to say. You know, they don't speak English, so we have to listen in a very different way.
So I feel like a lot of like the being mindful and the being consistent and being aware of your horse, like we've talked about before, like a lot of that also ties right back into what their day-to-day looks like. Are you in a busy lesson or boarding facility? Are you in a very small barn where maybe they aren't getting as much interaction? I think a lot of that can definitely play a part into it. And I've only ever boarded at like medium to large size facilities. So I'm very aware of all the comings and goings of lesson kids and camps and different farriers and different veterinarians and things like that. And I think that plays a really big part, because I know, again, my horse was tricky. He was the best, but it took some figuring out to really get him to where he felt happy all the time. And we ended up moving his stall more than once. So he, you know, he was in the middle of the aisle at one point where he couldn't get his head out, and he was a nightmare, banging on the door, banging on the walls, especially at feed time, which he hadn't done before. We moved him to the front of the aisle where he could greet everybody as he walked in, which he loved and everybody hated, because he had a big old moose head and he would just shove you across the aisle trying to say hello. So then we got to move him next to the indoor arena, which he loved and everybody else was fine with, because he would greet every horse as the mayor. But he was personable, and every horse somehow was fine with it, and people didn't get shoved across the aisle way because he was saying hi to the horse instead of to you. So like, that was a big part that I wouldn't have thought about until all of a sudden I had a barn manager who was like, let's figure it out. If he's not happy, let's just move him until he's happy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure with a big, busy barn like what you guys have, I'm sure you try to keep it as consistent and as like mentally well for them as possible. But like, what do you guys see and what do you guys do?
Okay, well, hold on. Before I get into what we see and what we do, I first just want to point out that like when we started this, we were saying, you know, some of these things are out of your control, but like that's a great example of a very small tweak that doesn't require 100 acres of turnout that can make a big difference.
He was banging on the walls. Then we had to make a second move for us because he was being a problem.
Sure,
so like,
sure.
There was also just the impetus of like, just because it works for him doesn't mean it has to work for everybody. Let's find one that works together. That I really appreciated my barn manager for that one. Like, she was such a great partner in
it's
that.
It's a lot of guess and check.
Yeah.
And until you find a situation that works for them. So we have a very like similar setup. Some of our stalls are on corners where horses get to see everything that comes and goes. Andy's stall is like the last stall in the aisle before our social area and our grooming stalls. So like, he gets to watch everybody get tacked up and groomed, and everyone's sitting in the social area, you know, having their charcuterie board on Friday nights. Like, so he's in on it, right? That kind of stimulation would freak Tilly out. So she needs to be in the back of the barn where it's a little bit more quiet and she's not getting as much stimulation. But a very fresh and a relatively painful example of this. So these ponies. So for listeners, I accidentally slipped and fell and bought two ponies for my daughter. It happens. They were a bonded pair. And so they came together. I was only in the market for one, but these ponies came together. They lived down the road from us. So when I brought them home, I walked them. There was no trailer. There was no big, it was really cute. Okay. So that's how close they lived to my barn, to the point where they had to walk past Oakwood to get to the trails. So they knew the barn. They've seen it. They're within eye shot. Okay. But they were the only two horses at their barn. They lived in like a backyard, again, 4-stall barn with family on premises, little kids. Okay. Totally different environment than a 60-stall boarding barn. We walked them maybe 400 yards over to my barn. And it was like, we were actually like, did something happen? Did it hurt them? Like, they were completely different horses. I actually called the owner and was like, hey, I know our contract says that you wanted first rights of refusal. Do you want to repurchase them?
Like,
this isn't working out.
Yeah.
Let's give them a little time. Let's let them settle in. It's been almost 2 months now. They're still not the same as they were when I saw them in the barn where we first went to go visit them before I purchased them. So, I mean, that is how much their environment can impact their mental health. I mean, these are ponies that were sold to me as like pony club mounts that like, I have the videos and pictures of like toddlers crawling underneath them, like brushing their bellies from the underside. And I'm looking at these ponies in my paddock, like, are we sure these are the same horses? So, I mean, that is how much an environment can impact a horse's mental well-being. So yeah, I mean, like don't discount it. So things that we have done, exactly what I said before was like, every time I tried it, they're bonded pair. Every time I try to separate them, every time they're asked to do something, it's always fun. We're not in a place to start working right now, right? Like these horses are supposed to be fun for my kid. So when we separate them and we take them out of their stall or out of their paddock, we're going to chew on some grass. We're going to have a fun little walk in across. We're only doing things that are positive, and we're seeing a little improvement, right?
Okay.
The goal would be to be able to have them separate and not lose their marbles when one of them goes the other way. But your environment, loud noises, sudden changes, the size of a barn, the fact that you went from being the only two ponies on your lot to now having 57 neighbors, that's a huge, huge difference in
yeah.
So, and all you can really do, again, consistency, train through it, you know, hire a good trainer. I'm so glad I have one. And she's been helping me every step of the way and making sure that it's all positive reinforcement. And we're not kicking them when they're down. You know what I mean? They're already struggling. So making sure that we're building a environment of things that we can control that are very consistent and very positive. And we're starting to see now, you know, 2 months in, we're now just starting to see some positive outputs of that. So like, stick with it. It's going to take some time, right? They're not machines. They're animals just like we are. And I mean, listen, I know I get this way. Like when I move, or my husband and I have moved for jobs like quite a few times, and like settling into a new town and a new environment, or even just starting a new job and like getting into it, takes a minute, right? Like I don't feel normal until like 6 months. So like it takes some time. Have some grace.
Stop asking 400 questions a day.
Exactly.
And you're like,
right.
Plan. Maybe
exactly.
I'm getting.
Yeah. So, you know, give your horse some grace. Understand that just like we get seasonal depression or anxious when we start a new job, they're going through, I mean, not to anthropomorphize, right? Because they're horses, but they still have, you know, emotionally and mentally traumatic experiences that are going to impact them. And having grace for that and showing them some mercy when they're experiencing these things, just understanding, I think, is like the first, you know, the first half of the battle.
Yeah. And I think we use the word consistency a whole bunch, and like it's relevant. It's always important. But I think the other half of that you've kind of illustrated with this really well is patience. You can be consistent all you want, but you do also have to make sure to give time for yourself to be really patient with this because you're in 2 months. You are 2 months deep on these ponies that were supposed to be like super safe and super easy for your kid. And like that's not easy. That's not frustrating. So giving yourself grace and understanding that it also requires patience, and like you can be frustrated away from the horse of the ponies, but like it's not easy. We're toting out this word consistency like it's, you know, you go and you grab it off the shelf and you snack on it. But like it takes work. And I definitely want to acknowledge for anybody out there who's, you know, on week three, on month three, on year three of trying to convince their horse or themselves that this is going to work and it's all going to be okay. Like, I see you. I hear you. Patience is so hard. And I'm proud of anybody who's out there fighting the good fight to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. That you put it really well there. I'm right there with you. It's tough. And that's why I think, okay, I might be misquoting here and I'm not going to go. Someone said, I want to say it was like Winston Churchill or like somebody famous, but that like it would take two lifetimes to figure out horses. Like it would take, like there's always going to be something more to learn, and that it is just, it's a long game. It really is.
Yeah.
Even with your heart horse, like it is all, people assume that they just walked out just like that. And you're like, no, it's fine. We haven't been spending 15 years working, right? But like, it's a long game. Like have patience, show up and understand that they are, they're experiencing everything for the first time too, right along with you. They just don't understand.
I always love that reminder, like be patient. They're living the first time also. Like,
exactly.
It's so
it's like a baby. It's like having a baby and like, you're like, why are they crying? It's just, they're figuring it all out right there with you.
Yeah. They've also never had to deal with this, and it's also hard, and everyone's also doing their best. And I think like, so much of the mental health game for yourself, but this episode specifically about your horse is just like also assuming the best, like assuming that your horse is putting their best hoof forward every day, assuming that your horse also wants to be good and try things and learn things. And that's not to say that if your horse is clearly not suited for your discipline or for their environment, that you shouldn't make changes. Like this is not a bury your head in the sand and be patient and consistent until the cows come home. But for as long as you can, for as long as it makes sense, for as long as you and your horse care team agree, like consistency and patience are like two of the biggest tools you can keep in your toolbox, right alongside a whole bunch of cookies to help ease whatever it is you're working on.
Amen, sister. Smart
guy. Equitreat specifically. Right.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I kind of want to go back because I'm realizing that maybe we didn't cover one critical piece of information for the listener, which is like, okay, my horse did just go through a, maybe not traumatic, but a stressful event. Like, what am I looking out for? How do I know if my horse is experiencing?
What are the signs? Yes.
All right. So I think I've mentioned a couple of them and chime in with more.
Yep.
One of them, like when we knew that something was up with Tilly, she like didn't want to go forward. Her performance, like she had just come off of the best show of her career. And then within 5-6 weeks, things were completely different. So it was like riding a different horse. That's a symptom. That's a symptom of something. So we scope her. Turns out she has grade 2 EGUS, right? So we treat that.
Yep.
And then we move on. So ulcers, I think, are harder to get to. So let's scratch the surface first. My horse, you have to have a diagnosis for that. But like things that you can just walk through the barn and notice. Mm-hmm. My horse is cribbing. My horse is weaving in their stall. I actually see horses crib and turn out sometimes. So that can be just like a perpetually anxious horse that you know, it's like twiddling your fingers or, you know, clicking a pen or doing something to just distract. You know, I like shake my foot sometimes, like when I'm on a plane.
All the time. You guys can't see it because you're at home, so you're welcome. Yeah. But the amount that I like twist bracelets and rings and earrings during this,
fidget.
And this is fun. Like I just am anxious.
Totally. So it's like a fidget, except for it's a fidget that ruins my super expensive fences. So I'm like, hey, horse, could you not fidget here, please?
Yeah. And my horse, who went from being pretty normal to all of a sudden kicking down the stall walls at dinner time. Thank God it wasn't ulcers. He just needed a different spot. But like any noticeable change to their behavior, I think, is like a really big one. And it can be anything from, like you said, Tilly just not wanting to perform, Hirsch kicking down the stall walls, anybody starting to crib or weave, or if all of a sudden they're, you know, calling out to friends when they've never done that before, they're not taking the bit, they're huffing when you do their girth, like literally anything that you're like, well, that's different. Don't just, well, that's different. Make a note of it.
Exactly. And those are all like the super high level symptoms. And there's typically rationale below that, right? So it could be like, my horse is twitching when I girth him up. That doesn't necessarily mean he has ulcers. It could be that his saddle doesn't fit right. It could be that he, you know, rolled weird in turnout and something just doesn't feel right. So, you know, all these things. And remember, though, that like physical stress can lead also to mental stress. Like if I hurt myself, I'm in physical anguish. That's kind of a harsh word. I don't know about anguish.
If I hurt myself. Mental discomfort. Yeah.
Mental discomfort. Right. So, I mean, the two go hand in hand. So like understanding that, like, you know, if my horse's saddle doesn't fit right, that certainly can contribute to a decline in mental health. If you're, you know, being asked to perform with a pair of shoes that are two sizes too small and someone says, go run a marathon, that's a tough thing to get through.
That's not going to be fun.
You got to put on your best mental grit hat to get through that, right? So
not every horse is the same in expressing these. Like I think of me and my husband all the time, where like I might have the flu and like 102 fever, and I'm like, you know what, it's okay, I can probably do some laundry today. And Zach like has a paper cut and he's like, oh man, my stomach kind of hurts. And like I love man, that that's flu. Our dynamic, because I always like being able to be like, the don't worry, I got you, I'm the big strong one, because that literally never happens in any other capacity. But like horses are the same way, where some of them are going to be like, hey, I actually have an abscess, but I would love to jump around this 3-6 course for you. And some horses are going to be like, so the wind blew wrong and now my back hurts.
Yep. That is 100%. Actually, I was there when they scoped Tilly, and I saw it was mostly grade 1 with like one or two lesions of grade 2. And she was like, you know, as far as it goes, this is pretty mild. And my first question was could that account for the behavior that we're seeing, or would you expect it to be like much more severe? And she was like, listen, I've seen horses with grade 4 ulcers that are just like hanging out. And I've seen horses with like spots of grade 1 that are unrideable. So like, it's just it's a personal pain tolerance, like how uncomfortable. Some horses are super stoic. And like you said, some will let you know, like, actually, that paper bag wasn't there before. It's there now.
And
I am upset. And now it's everyone's problem.
it is everyone's problem. But I think, it's knowing, I mean, how many times have we said it, but it's continuing to be true. Know your horse. And if you are somebody who is new to your horse, or you're a lesson rider, or one of the other myriad of ways that you just don't have, you know, 10 years of history with your current ride, like, There's no wrong feeling, and there's no wrong question to ask. I'm sure most barn managers, most trainers, most vets would agree, like, they'd rather you ask the question and be able to be, say, told no confidently, like, no, that's not the case because he's good or she's good or whatever it is, then you be like, oh yeah, I noticed that 4 months ago.
Yep.
So trust your gut. I think a lot of us are very hyper aware of the animals that we work with, whether you're super familiar or not. So just trust your gut, ask questions. Don't be afraid to continue to learn and grow and be told yes or no in any capacity. I think all of that's like just a part of the journey.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, we talked about how positive reinforcement and consistent handling is a huge thing that you can do for your horse that is not super resource laden. Making sure your tack fits well, you know, making sure that your barn and the configuration of your horse's stall is suitable for them.
And you mentioned turnout configuration. Yes. Like, yep. Andy's not a solid yep. citizen with friends. Exactly. My horse needed a very specific friend. Like, you just yep. making it yep. work the way you can.
And then we also mentioned that there are some physical manifestations of these things that can end up in like gastric ulcers. And mm-hmm. So there are opportunities for changing your feeding supplementation. You can add, we already know Ashley's a big fan of magnesium. I think we had like an entire episode about me gushing about magnesium, but you know,
I think we should do a specific one on it, though, to be fair.
I'm here for it. You know I will be. I will bring cool. I'll bring my super
Stay
game hat
for that
day.
One.
But I mean, I think that taking a look at, like, if your horse has to be on stall rest, what kind of supplements can you add to help them, maintain a calm demeanor while they're being asked to stand there? If your horse is going to be traveling a lot for horse shows and you can't be super consistent with everything, what, you know, do they need some type of gut support to help prevent the onset of gastric mm-hmm. ulcers? So there are going to be situations where you cannot control everything. And, you know, you just have to do your best to maybe add things to the regimen and take a good hard look at, do we have a Beamer blanket or a MagnaWave that we have access to? I mean, my horses live better than I do. They all have body workers and chiropractors and they get MagnaWaved. Yeah. So making sure that if your horse does have to be subjected to some of these external stressors and there's not a ton you can do about it, what can you then add to the regimen to help them through those things? So I think looking at, like, I know when we had Meg on in the last episode, we talked about smart therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't have $10,000 to buy a brand new saddle right now. So we're doing the best we can with a shimmed pad. And
yeah.
I want to make sure that he's getting chiropracted and has his, you know, smart therapy sheet on when he goes to bed at night. So there are a lot of things that we can add to their regimen too, to help kind of negate the stresses that we're ultimately adding to their day.
Yeah. And I love that it can range from big to small, like you said. I love that it can range from a whole new saddle and a Beamer blanket to, can we change their stall? Do they need yep. ear puffs when they go yep. out to ride? Like, what changes can we start with? What are our goal changes, and having like really just honest conversations with what you can and can't do and what you can do to make it work as best you can are really big.
100%.
And you can't kill the try is something that I say a ton
I totally
in my personal
agree.
Relationships and in my riding relationships, like, just try.
Yeah. Add the slow feed hay pillow. See what happens. You know? Why not?
Try to get.
Yeah.
Do overnight turnout if you yep. can. See what yep. happens. Throw in a pony friend. See what happens.
Yeah.
There's just so many things that you got to, if you can, if you have a barn manager who's able to make those changes with you, or a trainer or whoever it is that helps you care for your horse, like, just ask questions and try things.
Yes. And ultimately, if you're listening to this and you're doing those things, you're doing really well. So
yes.
pat yourself on the back. You're a good horse owner if you're even considering this conversation as pivotal, because that means you're thinking about these things.
Yes, I think, and that's part of don't kill the try, right? Like, if you're like, wow, I've never thought of a single one of these things. Oh my God, congrats. You have so many cool things you get to go and think about and try and discuss and stuff like that. If you've done half of these, if you've done all of these, like, just good on you, no matter where you are at in your horse journey. Because, I mean, you said it earlier, you can't stop learning and growing. That's something that everybody we've interviewed on customer care for Meet the Pack, like, so many of them reiterate the same thing. Like, just keep learning, just keep absorbing, keep filtering information through. And I think that's like my favorite part of what we do here on this podcast, is just trying to provide more information. Just, you know, insert rainbow meme GIF, the more you know kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yep, I sure do. Wait, hold on. Who is Meet the Pack today?
Oh, actually, it's one of my old bosses who I used to work under when I was on customer care. It is Elizabeth Robinson. So she's going to be fun, because she actually works in our business and analytics stuff. We don't talk about the numbers too much because, frankly, I don't understand numbers too much, but we'll probably talk to her more later.
Awesome.
Now, let's meet the pack.
Hey, all. Thanks for sticking with us. We are here for our Meet the Pack segment. And this time I have the absolute pleasure of getting to interview not only a very longtime friend of mine here at Smart Equine, but also one of my former bosses. So welcome, Elizabeth Robinson, to the podcast. You will hear me refer to her as E-Rob throughout. So don't get too confused. Elizabeth and E-Rob are the same person. I'm not interviewing more than one. So E-Rob, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I don't really respond to Elizabeth very well at work. It's E-Rob all the way. Thank you.
It did feel like a jump scare saying your full name out loud. So I'm glad that we're on the same page there. All right, E-Rob. So tell us about your time here at Smart Equine. I know you've been here for a while. I just hit 11 years. I know you're even further on than that. So tell us about your time here, if you have horses and anything else you want to add.
Thank you so much for having me. So I have been at Smart Equine for 17 years in October.
Oh, wow.
And I was on customer care for 10 years and then moved over to data analytics. And I'm now, my title's data engineer. So a lot of transitions, but a lot of fun along the way. I have two Arabians right now. I started with one, so you can see how that's going.
Like potato chips, right?
They live on my property, which is a super privilege for me, along with another older horse and a mini.
That's a good little herd to have in the backyard. I'm sure that they are super quiet and never give you any trouble at all, right?
Never, anytime. I never have to watch them while I'm trying to do work.
Yeah. No, of course. No distractions. Love that for you. So I know you started in customer care, which is where I also started, and we can kind of to circle back on that, but you're in data analytics, you're an engineer now. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what do you do and what's the best part of it?
That's a good question. So I think the thing I enjoy most about the analytics side is that I get to work with almost every department in the company, assuming they need data, which most of them do. So I get to dabble back in customer care data whenever that comes up. I get to talk with merchandising and see what things they want to know are selling really well, and with marketing on any projects they're working on to see how a sale went or promotion. And then, you know, fun things like finance and accounting.
Sure, the fun things.
And then also operations, trying to figure out inventory things, stuff like that. And there are people that focus specifically on each of those departments, but getting to work with them and their data is just keeps life interesting every day.
I love that we have horse girls in every department, because Lord knows I have zero brain cells for numbers. So I'm glad we've got you over there handling all the numbers side of things.
Yeah, I would say it's a steep learning curve for our company if you don't have that.
Yeah. And you used to work in customer care as well, which is where you were my boss for a short, well, I say short. It was too short for me, but it probably wasn't actually that short. Short period of time. And what was the best part of that for you? Because I know that that's like such a totally different job from what we do now.
Yeah. So these days I sit in the quiet solitude all day long, which is very different than being on the phones all day. So I would say the things that I really enjoyed about that job were definitely talking to horse people all day long. Every conversation was different. Every horse was different. It was really fun to hear what people were doing, what they were looking for, what their challenges were. And then customer care itself is just a really lovely, tight-knit group that I enjoyed actually doing a lot of training with all of them, managing folks like you, Jenna, and getting to know, you know, people coming into to a job like that as horse people trying to earn a living in the horse world. So.
Yeah, it's a great place to start, too. Like you said, it's such a tight-knit group. It's always fun to get to chat with them now and kind of go back to the roots a little bit. So look at us reliving our glory days. So we talked a little bit, or you mentioned that you've got four in your backyard, and two of them are yours specifically. Can you tell us a little bit about them? They're Arabians, but what are their ages? What are their names? And what do you do with them right now?
So I'll start with the one I've had longer. That's Raz. He is 27.
27?
27. He and his mini friend are the same age, and they eat out of the same hay bag all day long and harass each other and are unaware that there are other free hay bags ever.
Of course not. No, because when you are that close, you must breathe the same air at all times. I love that for them.
And so they're very cute. And Raz is your like quintessential Arabian. So when people who know and don't know Arabians think of Arabians, He is what they think about.
He's so fancy, snorty.
Yes. Everything is exciting. Everything's dramatic. Yeah.
And I bet he looks gorgeous while things are exciting and dramatic, too, because that's got to be quintessential Arabian.
Yeah. He is beautiful all the time. He's had his share of health issues, but a particular note, if you ever were to meet him, is that his tongue hangs out because he had EOTRH and had his front teeth removed. So,
oh my gosh, I forgot about this. So he's always kind of sticking his tongue out at you, isn't he?
Yeah. So he thinks he looks majestic and gorgeous and beautiful strutting around with his tongue hanging out. it has an interesting dynamic to it. So he's pretty.
And you know what? I like that it doesn't humble him in the slightest. I like that he still thinks he looks just as majestic as he did prior to not having front teeth.
He's definitely rolling with it. And it does not stop him eating, which is good.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because it doesn't, like, you haven't, or I guess, have you had to change how you feed him because of that?
No, in fact, he was putting on too much weight at one point. So,
good for him.
A smaller hole of hay nets, and he had it all figured out. Yep, no problems.
No teeth, but plenty of brain cells. Love that for him.
Yeah, I was very impressed how quickly he rebounded from that. So, my other Arabian, I just got, he's coming up on his gotcha date. Gosh, it's later this month. So,
that's exciting.
7 years old, and his name is Pharaoh. He looks like a quintessential Arabian. He's gray. My other Raz is actually chestnut. But Pharaoh is gray, very light, white, basically, and very different personality, very confident.
Oh.
Very playful. Raz is not playful at all. Not understand that concept. Pharaoh will play all day long and harasses the rest of the old boys, much to their chagrin.
He wants to make sure that they're getting their steps in and they're staying active as seniors. I mean, he's caring about them, really.
I mean, to be fair, Ras is now on extra mashes because he's burning all these calories that he wasn't before. So he has his brother to thank for that.
Yeah, Pharaoh's senior citizen exercise program is going great. And so I'm assuming at the beautiful, fantastic age of 27, Raz is mostly retired, if not fully retired at this point.
Yes.
Good for him. But for Pharaoh, what is, because he's only 7, so do you have, is he just a horse you get to go brush and love on and hang out with? Is he a horse that you have plans to ride? What does his life trajectory look like for you right now?
So he came to me backed with some rides on him, and he's pretty steady. He's just green.
Okay.
I think my short-term goal is really to make sure he's healthy physically and mentally, and then long-term want to do some trail riding with him, maybe some competition, go out and do some fun stuff like parades. I had a horse previously that did everything, and so he's kind of next in line to do that, which hopefully he'll be okay with. Raz was not okay with that. We didn't
Raz have had plans. Other plans.
Yeah. He was so, where's the retirement farm?
He's like, I'm looking for my long-term strategy goal, which is to do nothing and look beautiful. Honestly, same. Like, I really do admire him for figuring that out. And so you have these two same breed, but very different horses, right? Do you feed them supplements?
I do. So Raz, in addition to his teeth issues, has had some metabolic issues and things like that. We also, they live like literally in my backyard where I have no grass. So we have considerations with that.
Mm-hmm.
So Raz is on SmartFlex Senior. He's on Smart Pituitary and Vitamin E.
Okay. So SmartFlex Senior, I think a lot of people probably know that's a joint supplement. Vitamin E, that's pretty self-explanatory. But Smart Pituitary, for anybody who hasn't heard of that one before, what made you choose that one for Raz?
So he was diagnosed with PPID.
Okay.
A few years ago, and I was trying to find some ingredients that would help support him around that. And he has metabolic issues. And that just had a great combination of ingredients that were recommended in the research that I was doing and what I had read.
Okay. So to help support metabolic function and the fact that he's an older horse with both of those things going on, that was kind of where you were like, this is the ticket.
Yeah. I didn't find anything else that combined all those things in one supplement.
Nice. Okay. Cool. So that's a nice easy win. And then for Pharaoh, because he's younger, but you're looking to to do some things and keep him pretty active. So what does his supplement routine look like?
So the first no-brainer for me was to put him on Smart Digest Ultra.
That's always a win.
Yep. So I do Colicare, and I also, you know, I don't have the benefit of having a consistent hay supply. So I wanted to make sure that I covered. And he has been a little bit more sensitive digestively than the other guys. I think, I don't know why, but that just seems to be his MO. So this does seem to be helping support him through those things. And then I also have him on Smart Gray Defense, as he is prematurely very white. And
yeah, for a young guy, he really has the whole like fully whited out thing. He's not very dapply at all, is he?
He's not. He's a little flea bitten, but yeah, he kind of looks like a unicorn running to the backyard.
Oh my gosh. I mean, by the time this episode comes out, I think we might be past or coming up to Halloween. I can't remember the date of this. So at that point, I will expect to see a horn on him.
Understood.
So we've been able to talk about both your guys and their supplements. You did a great job already kind of giving me some information on like their health challenges and things like that. So with everything that you've been through, because like Raz was not your first horse, so Pharaoh's certainly not your first horse. You've had a couple in your lifetime prior to that as well. Is there anything that you wish more horse owners knew ahead of time or talked about more or anything like that?
The thing that comes to mind for me is actually the vitamin E.
Really? Yeah, because I kind of breezed right past that. So yeah, let's circle back.
Yeah. When I first had horses, they were out on pasture. I was really lucky, especially here in New England, on the South Shore, Massachusetts. Like, there's just not tons of places you can have your horses where they get pasture all day long.
Too true.
I happened to be at one of those places. So it wasn't something I thought about a lot. But then, especially after I moved them home, where we live in the woods, I did some testing and realized we were deficient. And then also when I got Pharaoh, he was really deficient. So we've spent the whole year like testing, and it's been going up, but it's taking a long time.
And so, you guys are doing blood work for testing?
Yes.
Okay. So you and your vet are taking care of that and getting those results back every so often. And that's how you're kind of gauging what he needs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I've, you know, in learning more about it, realized there's so many things that can happen with vitamin E deficiencies, and some things that I've noticed in him have gotten better. So that's been really gratifying. So I think it's just one of those simple wins to get your horses tested and find out if they're deficient and how much you need to feed and go from there.
Yeah. And with the stuff that you've noticed, like if there's anybody out there who's like, well, how would I even know if I'm not testing? And granted, testing is always the way to go. Like, we're always going to recommend working with your veterinarian. But for the things that you've noticed that have changed, is it like behavioral? Is it physical? Like, what is it that's been like a clue in for you that you're on the right track?
For Pharaoh, it is physical. He's not 100% in normal range yet. He has presented with a lot of sensitivity to touch.
Oh, and okay.
For me, it's like, I like to groom my horses and
cuddle
with them and have them. And he's like, oh, heck no. So that's been interesting. And I think some of it's his personality, but I also see changes as the vitamin levels have come up that he's been more tolerant of that. And
okay, he's just more comfortable in his skin in some ways.
Exactly. Yep.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Okay, so that was a great one. I'm so glad you brought that up. And for anybody, this is like my favorite question to end on, but for anybody who's like just getting started, whether it's just getting started with horses, just getting started learning about supplements, or just getting started learning about like health and wellness overall, is there anything that you recommend? Because you mentioned that you did a lot of research prior to putting your horses on certain supplements. Is there anywhere that you're like, this is where I started, this is where I would recommend anybody start if possible?
Don't ever get to a point where you feel like you know everything.
Oh God, right?
Because working on customer care for 10 years, we had tons of education thrown at us. And I definitely had moments when I felt really confident. And I was, you know, advising people on the phone every day, all day long. But then things would come out of left field with my own horses. And I'd be going, wait, what is wrong with my horse? And
they keep us humble.
So I think keeping an open mind, always being willing to learn and staying in tune with new research that's coming out, things like that, which I know Smart Equine's really good about. posting that kind of stuff as well. That has been really useful for me in my horse journey with my, you know, very different horses I've had along the way. So
yeah, that would I love be
my,
that.
My advice.
Okay. And one final sneak question, because I realized I should have asked this earlier, but you have two Arabians. Why Arabians?
Honestly, I may have read the entire Black Stallion series when I was in middle school.
Wait,
and I just
really?
Never looked
That's
back.
So cute. Erob. Yeah. I love that. Because I also read those books. I mean, growing up the time that we did, those were so popular. It was kind of hard to avoid them, but they were so good. And yeah, who didn't want a Black Stallion at that point? A fancy Arabian galloping down the beach.
Yeah. And they were so captivating. Better than any other horse books I read at the time. So.
Yeah. I mean, the horses themselves definitely do measure up.
They do. In each in their own special way.
Well, thank you so much, Erob. This has been great. I love getting to know more about your boys and about what you do with them and the way you supplement them and how you think about health and wellness. This was really cool for me, since it's been a minute since we've caught up. I think that's probably a good place to wrap on, as much as I would love to keep pestering you about Black Stallion and all the other horse books you've read in your lifetime. But for now, I will say thank you. It was so great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Jenna. I really loved doing this.
Here we go again for our giveaway. Last week for episode 4, we gave away a new Smart Equine Ultimate Turnout Blanket, which is huge. So big, big thanks to Megan, the wellness team, for that one. And I'm excited to say that Olivia from out in Oregon is going to be the proud recipient of that prize. So congrats, Olivia. If you have not already seen an email from me, you should hopefully shortly. Now for the episode 5 giveaway, we've got a great little bundle of Smart Equine notebooks and pen, perfect for making lists for all the gifts that you have to get for the farrier, veterinarian, barn manager, trainer, me, anybody else that you have on your holiday wish list this year. Plus, a little $25 Smart Equine gift card to help you get started. You can enter to win by clicking or tapping on the link in the podcast description, which will take you right to our giveaway form, or you can go to our new giveaway form link, which is www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. That's it. That's the whole thing. www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. Entries close just 1 week after this episode airs, so you have until October 22nd to win. Please enter, please share your feedback, and tell your horse I said hi. All right, guys. Well, you can find links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
And we are here twice a month on the 15th and 30th, but in between, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as Smart Equine, or you can shop online at smartequine.com.
Until next time, stay smart, keep trying,
and give your horse a cookie for us.